like that. Just like that. Just like that.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Box. My name is Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. We're both Hawthorn supporters, so we're not as happy this week, but we're not going to talk about that too much. I know people are already in the chat at fanfooted.com.au/video. We're already saying they're waiting with bated breath for Hawk Talk this week. Well, you'll just have to wait to see what happens. But look, obviously it's a very big fantasy news week this week, Molly, and also a big week in general news. I'm not sure I kept a whole lot of attention on the general news, but certainly in fantasy news, it was all happening this week, wasn't it?
It was a week of carnage and not very nice week at all, and it's continued on into the next week.
Yes, so it's, next week, and the next 12 weeks in some cases. But I mean, look, it's just been. I think the thing that annoys fantasy coaches most is not knowing what is happening. I mean, it's okay when we know that coaches lie. Coaches lie. We know that. This is known to us all. But when you have the situation today where you have Dean Solomon on SEN this morning saying that Gary Ablett Jr. is going to be out for not only this week but 2 to 3 weeks because his knee has not come up as they had hoped. We had Ken Hinckley on the radio later on in the day saying 2 to 4 weeks. These two are both assistant coaches at Gold Coast, so you think they'd know what was happening. And then you get the actual coach, Guy McKenna, on 6PR with his old mate, the bald bloke, who am I thinking of? Carl Langdon, of course. Hello, Carl. I'm sure I believe you're a listener, so I apologise for forgetting your name temporarily. But he's on with his old mate Carl, and of course they're chatting away. And apparently he says, "Oh, you know, maybe just one. You know, he might come back the week after. Oh, you know, his leg's fine." What's happening? What is happening with Gary Ablett Jr.? Why are three different assistant coaches from the same club on the same day saying three different things? This is what frustrates us. Just frustrates us, Molly.
Well, you know my feeling on the subject. I've called for the AFL to step in and regulate and have tougher laws and have teams having to report on injured players and how much they train and the like, but do the AFL listen to me? No, they don't. And so we all suffer because of it.
Like, for instance, today in The Age. Now, The Age publishes... I didn't pick up the Herald Sun, but I presume they do the same thing. Publish the full AFL injury list. But they didn't have them from Carlton St Kilda. Now, St Kilda in particular are a past master at either lying through their teeth or just not releasing the injury reports. This has to stop. It just has to stop. This is not good enough from the AFL. There has to be some sort of system, and look, this is an old hobby horse for both you and I, Molly, so we're probably not going to get anywhere with this, but... The lack of professionalism in some quarters of the AFL, and let's not get out of the tribunal. Good Lord, what's going on there? Mm. The Joel Selwood decision, that was just laughable. It is a complete and utter joke. But anyway, let us get on to fantasy relevant things, Molly. And of course, once we start the round review, we have to talk about the. Now, of course, we're not talking about the Anzac Day game. Last week, because we covered some of the news from that in the previous podcast, which of course was done after the Anzac Day game on the previous Thursday. But so we'll start with the Friday night game, and of course, one of the big news stories of the week was Nathan Fyfe finally succumbing. Obviously, we had fantasy coaches had the option of putting him in for our version of a long term injury, you know, and surgery. But the actual real coach of Fremantle has decided to do that this week, and he's going to be out for 3 months, which of course means that unless you've fallen asleep with your team, he's not going to be in any fantasy teams for 2012. So I suppose, could we have guessed this? I mean, is there anything to be done? Can we try to make a better decision next time, those of us who kept him? Or was it a bad decision, or was it just luck?
Well, I mean, he did come out and score 90 on the weekend, so it wasn't totally a bad decision in that sense. But, I mean, there was medical people I know as late as Thursday and Friday. I listened. I'd probably planned to trade him out and then never did because of all the other carnage the week before I felt I wanted to hold on to the trades. But, yeah, he always worried me. And looking at the game after Friday night, it didn't feel... Although he did score 90, and that was nice, I did feel like he really looked tentative, not going in. Every time he fell, it worried me. So, yeah, it's sort of, in some senses, it's better that he gets out now than, you know, in a couple of weeks or, you know, in a game where he scores badly. But I think, you know, it's a tricky thing. I mean, the same thing with Ablett. It's like, do you trade them? Are you going to have egg on your face? Is he going to come out and score 120? It's just really hard to say.
Now, before we go on, I've done something. I should have done this before we started the round review, Molly. But we're doing something this evening that we've never done on the Coach's Box before, and that is a
comedy.
very funny. now we're doing a live read, but unfortunately, I don't actually have a script. So we do have a sponsor for this evening's program. And that sponsor is sportsdeals.com.au. Spelt SPORTSTEALS, Sports Deals, all one word, .com.au, which, as I think you told me, is pretty much a Groupon for sporting goods. So I believe people who are familiar with Groupon, or perhaps it's one of those deal of the day websites. Many other. Woot.com is one I'm familiar with, but we're here to talk about sportsdeals.com.au. So it's I believe they have specific sites for different states. Like, I'm obviously in Victoria, and I see a deal today for Adidas men's compression half tights for only $39.95 at the moment, which has. Apparently, you can buy it for, as I said, $39.95, and it's got a countdown timer for a day and 12 hours. So you can have that deal, and then in a day and a half, it's going to rotate to the next deal. So sportsdeals.com.au, and I believe there's Melbourne ones and Perth ones and yep. Sydney ones and what have you. And I believe also when you share it on social media, particularly Facebook, you can actually get referral money through
$5 a pop, it looks like.
$5 a pop. Now we, well, you can eight of those, and you could actually get the tights for free. Mm. Anyway, as I said, so tonight, all of tonight's silliness is endorsed by Sports Deals, and if we get sued, then I presume that means that they're going to be part of the lawsuit. So that's a very, very nice of them to support us that way. So
yes, good luck. So don't forget to follow our good friend Sports Deals. Follow them on Twitter at SportsDeals.
Yep.
At SportsDeals, or on Facebook at facebook.com/SportsDeals.
Very good. Okay.
So they've got all the bases covered.
So that was our first live read, Molly. I think we covered that fairly well, and it didn't. Do we feel like we're sold out now, or what's the deal?
And to all the people listening who are on Twitter or listening to the podcast, do us a favor. When you hear it, jump on Twitter and thank them for sponsoring the Coach's Box.
Yes.
As well as signing up with them.
So. It was very nice of them, yes. And, of course, they do have an ad on the front page, and I think all the other pages on the top right of Fan Footy. So if you want to, if you don't feel like remembering the name, then
right
you'll see the big green one at the top right of Fan Footy, so you can click on that as well. So anyway, let's get on with the round review. Now, of course, the thing with Nathan Fyfe, Molly, I actually did a big plan today of all of my trades all the way through to the buy rounds. I don't know whether you've done this, but this is an exercise I'm seeing a fair few fantasy coaches actually starting to do now. It is pretty much the time for it. And I figured out, now I have 19 trades at the moment. I figured out that by the time that round 13 finishes, I will have what looks almost like a finished side, but I only have 6 trades left after I've performed all of these trades, not only to get as many guns as possible by, you know, cashing out all these cash cows, but also trying to avoid the buys. I figured six trades was what I was planning to have. Now, this is not really a huge amount of trades to have for a full 10 rounds that you're going to have after round 13, so rounds 14 through 23. So, I mean, I'm thinking that with this side, which will have 6 trades, it has, you know, six absolute premium midfielders. It, I mean, there's a few little holes there. Perhaps my B7 might be bug, or my F7 might be poor pleasure. So it might not be absolute guns in all 22 positions. And I believe I'm still trying. I mean, it does assume that Giles does play out the rest of the season. So he might be eventually one that might attract one of those six trades if he sort of breaks down towards the second half of the year. But that is my plan anyway. That was what I came up with today. So is that too few? Do I need to lower my expectations about the sort of side that I can have after the bye? And the reason I ask this now is because the Fife issue and the Ablett issue are actually fairly fairly central to this whole issue. Is that if you do that plan now, and I think I would advise a lot of fantasy coaches to do that now, because it brings home how valuable trades are, and how if I'd done this last week, it would have told me don't trade Fife and don't trade Ablett, and it's telling me now don't trade Ablett because you actually can't afford to use that trade, given all of the trades you're going to have to make, especially all the way through the buys, if you want to avoid donuts.
Yeah, but I mean, could you not use one of those trades through the buy rounds to bring Ablett back?
Yes, that's true.
Or because he's got the round 13, it affects that.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm assuming that I'll be able to play him all the way through. But the thing is, if I trade someone for Ablett now, then I'm going to have to use an extra... That'll be an extra trade left. So, basically, I would have... Instead of having six trades at the end, I'd have five trades at the end. And five trades for 10 rounds, I'm not sure that computes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I can see what you're saying, especially with Ablett. I mean, Fife is a no-brainer. You can't sit a guy of that much money on the bench for 12 weeks or plus. So, I mean, the Ablett decision does come down to a matter of, do you think he is going to... it is going to be 1 or 2 weeks, or is it going to be 3 or 4? And when he comes back, is he going to be Ablett when he comes back, or is he going to be an injured Ablett who's not going to score well? Now, on last week's show, you pointed out that his return from injuries were normally great, and so that may come into your calculation. But I think in the next few weeks, you know, there's still a chance for scores, and it depends on how you're playing the game. If you are in a league situation where you're going after the league title, I would absolutely say there's probably not a lot of point trading out Ablett this week. Mm. You're better off to sit on him. Worst case scenario, maybe it's 3 or 4 or 5 weeks that you've without him. In a league situation, not a problem. You'll have him back after the buys, you know, back to Ablett status. If you're going overall or eliminator or a cash league or something like that, maybe you want to have someone now. I mean, you know, a guy like Swan is dipped this week. He's not going to be down with that 171 for much longer. You can jump on him now at his lowest point for the season, or for quite a while anyway. And, you know, perhaps when Ablett comes back, I think he will have, I'm just checking it, but he would have probably a little bit of a break even, and could go down after the first week, and maybe bring him in later.
I believe it's about. I think his break even's like less than 120. So I mean, he dropped a bit with that 97, obviously, and similar in Supercoach. But I don't think he has a lot. I mean, and as of course we went through last week, his return games are usually not very low. He pretty much comes back as good as he always has.
Yeah. So his break even's 120 in Dream Team.
Yep.
Or 119. Now, with yours, was it 19 before this round or 19 after this round?
19 before this round. Well, actually, I'll go through the trades that I'm planning out. So this is just all a plan. I mean, I'm not committed to these trades, but certainly this week it would be. I mean, and just to specify, I'm not saying to keep Fife all the way through. I am saying to trade Fife, because that's just too much to keep for 12 weeks. So this week it'd be Fife to Beams. And it'd be McCarthy to Horsley, and that would leave me after I started off with a kitty of 131. That'll leave me with 270 after this week. Week after, Devon Smith to Taylor Adams. That gives me 120. Morris to either Nathan Brown or Lee Spur if he gets named. That's another 100 odd. So that'll leave me with about 500 after round six. After that, I would upgrade Ellis to someone like a Heppel, around 12 back. And I would upgrade one of the whichever one of the three giant centres that I have in Green, McDonald or Shield, whichever one of those had gone to the top of the roller coaster, upgrade him to Mark Murphy. Now, after that, I would probably only have about $50,000. So after that, I would have, 13 trades. So the final two trades I would make before the buy period would be a double trade of Green and McDonald, or whoever the two remaining of those giants are, and I'd go down to someone like Sumner, also from the Giants, who is going to come on apparently, he's going to come on from the Giants soon because he's been playing well in the NEAFL, and then up to Boyd or Rockliffe, one of the round 11 premiums. So that would leave me with a structure of two round 11 players in each of the positions, and then three round 12 backs and four round 12 backs. Is that right? Yes, three and four, and then four round 12 forwards and three round 12 forwards, and that would allow me maximum flexibility for getting my way through the buys. And obviously in the centres, it's two round 11s. Three round 13s and three round 12s. So during the buys, I'll be getting rid of, in round 11, after round 11, I'll be getting rid of Spur and Magna for probably some more giants, Bunting and Haynes. And I would be possibly doing a sideways trade of one of the forwards. After round 12, I'll be getting rid of Horsley and Hall. Hopefully getting those up to round 11 or 12 premiums, like say, you know, Rockliffe or Pavlich, and then so by the end of round 13, after I've made all these bye week trades, my team is supposed to be Deledio, Scotland, Goddard, Shaw, Hargrave, Heppel, Clark as my seven backs, plus a couple of giants on the bench. Swan, Pendlebury, Murphy, Ablett, Boyd, Rockliffe, you know, in the centres, plus a couple of giants on the bench. Obviously Cox, Giles, Redd and Stevenson, I'm hoping not to trade in there. And then the forwards, it would be Franklin, Martin, Beams, Goods, Cloak, Pavlich, and maybe Dangerfield. That Dangerfield one would have to be a round 11 forward, which is obviously going to be a bit of an issue, but I'm hoping to find someone, maybe Dangerfield, maybe someone else who'll fill the bill there. And then Paul Pleasure on the bench, and probably another giant in the forwards there. So that is a team with six trades left that I would hope would be able to get me through until, you know, with a minimum of donuts towards the end of the year. But so even six trades for ten rounds is still pretty cutting it pretty fine. But that's the game as it is, unfortunately, at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had a little bit of bench cover, and that'll get you through a bit as well. But I mean, you'll be surprised. I mean, I've had that sort of thing the last few years, and you'd be surprised how far you can go through on six trades.
Yeah.
You'll probably even find that, you know, if you've got a settled lineup, and barring, you know, a terrible run with injury, which we have seen this year, you could easily get through to the end on six trades with a bit of luck and some good backup. So,
well, put it this way,
that's absolutely possible.
Footy Lover 18. Well, I figured this out because I'm having an argument with Footy Lover 18 about this, and I figured out the last 2 years. Now, last year I think he'd finished in the top, I don't know, somewhere in the top 500. I'm probably doing him a disservice, and it might have been top 200. The previous year, he was nowhere. Both of the last 2 years, he has finished round 13 with three trades. Now, that's two. That's not enough. That is the reason why he hasn't won the cars yet, is because he burns trades like they're going out of fashion. And he's probably the that's the one flaw in his strategy, is that he trades too heavily. But I'm not exactly sure what the par is, what you should be aiming for. Certainly six is probably a little bit too few. Maybe you'd like to have seven or eight for 10 rounds, but it's going to be a matter of luck whether you need them or not. And certainly, though, I mean, having 19 trades at the moment is probably a little below par. I mean, you'd like to have 20 or 21. But yeah, I mean, 7 or 8 would be ideal. But I think you're going to have to burn a lot of trades between now and the end of that round 12, and it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to pretty much have a settled team, like a finished team by then, and those 22 starters you would hope would be the ones you coast through to the end with.
Yeah. No, I think it's doable. I mean, as I say, I've done it the last few years. It is doable, but you do need a little bit of luck.
One thing that came out of that, the one thing that came out of that is that I don't want to trade Gary because that would leave him with 5, and I don't want to do that. And also, I have heard some coaches say, oh, well, I'll fix up my team after round 13 with a few extra trades to get it the way I want it. That's going to, I mean, if you might have a few players who are not quite where you want them after round 13 when all the buys are finished, but you're only going to have, a literal handful. You're going to have 5 or 6 trades, or maybe 7 or 8. Those trades are going to look like they're rare as hen's teeth at that stage, and I think of people who think that they're going to be able to fix their team after round 13 are a bit kidding themselves, because that would be very dangerous, a very dangerous strategy to go with. But I suppose the other issue is whether people will actually eat donuts on purpose because they want to save trades. So I suppose it's a matter of how much you value a trade for, because I'm actually purposely eating a donut in round 11 in that strategy, instead of having it in round 12. So it's going to be something which, look, again, it's one of those ones where there's no right or wrong answer. It's going to be a matter of the personnel you have and whether you're actually going to be able to avoid donuts, and that is a matter of luck, unfortunately. That's the way we have, that's the way that the competition is structured, with, you know, limited trades, but that's the game we have in front of us. And, you know, the people who win the competitions are going to be the ones who get that little bit of luck, but they would have also have been pretty good coaches to have a chance in the first place. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, on to the rest of the round review. Lockie Neal, from that same game on the Friday night, Molly, is he worn the vest twice? Because his numbers certainly, yeah, so he was on, I think he's worn the vest twice. Now, there's been a lot of hype around Lockie Neal in the pre-season, but obviously the numbers don't necessarily reflect that. He's not played either of the first halves in the games that he's played, so he starts off automatically with a break-even, which is over his average of, well, it is at his average of 21 in Dream Team. So, I mean, look, do you believe the hype? Do you believe that Neil is going to be able to avoid the vest in future weeks? I mean, does the Fife injury mean that he's going to start playing the Fife role? What do we take out of Neil's job security?
Yeah, no, I mean, you wouldn't like it at the moment. Although of the injuries, Sanderlin's not back this week. Fife gone. Might give him a chance, although I think there's a couple of guys possibility to come back. But yeah, I wouldn't be betting on him at this point on the basis of his two performances so far. It's just probably too big of a risk, I would have thought.
Mm. I haven't liked Neal all through the preseason. I think he plays too high. Now, I mean, we've seen players like, I mean, we're going to talk about Kyle Horsley, who's obviously the way he's played in the actual big league is a lot different to the way he played in the preseason and in the lower league, from reports. So, I mean, whether Neal is going to get as many rotations as, say, Horsley did is up for a discussion. But I certainly on the basis of what I've seen, my belief is that I can afford to bypass Neal and forget about him, because I think he will to play too deep forward. But I mean, obviously I would probably feel more comfortable about Neal's, not only his job security but also his, you know, possibility for midfield rotations, if he had come into the side without Mundy and Barlow returning. But I think those guys are the ones who are going to take all the stuff that Fife had in the earlier part of the season. And I don't think Neil's going to take a Horsley role. But anyway, I think obviously he's a quality player, but I don't think he's a fantasy scorer personally myself. But anyway, okay. So those of us who are trading Gary Ablett Jr. Molly on the other side of that game from Friday night, obviously with Carlton, it seems to me that Mark Murphy, if you don't have him already, he is the obvious choice if you're going to trade Ablett. Almost purely because of the buy situation, because he has the same buy. But I feel like that is, I mean, if you are in a position to trade, and I'm assuming people don't have Pendlebury, because I think he's still a little bit underpriced. But maybe if you don't have Pendlebury, he seems obvious. But I'm assuming that a lot of people have him already. But I'm also assuming that a lot of people don't necessarily have Murphy. I think he's a lot less popular in both competitions this year than Pendlebury is. Do you agree with me that Murphy would be the obvious one? You just look at his numbers and they're just perfect. They're just very low standard deviation, absolute, you know, top notch level. I mean, he hasn't produced a whole lot of 150 pluses, obviously, as Gary has. But you'd love those numbers every week.
Yeah, of course you would. Yeah, they look good, and he's definitely a great option. I guess the worry is, are they going to come up against some guys in the next few weeks that, or, you know, in a month's time, that's going to cause you some trouble? But, you know, the next month looks pretty good with Western Sydney, unless he gets a bye. It could be a bit of a worry there. He's got Melbourne and Adelaide and St Kilda in that mob. Nothing too dangerous there. So, yeah, he looks good if he plays for the next month.
Now, Tabs brings up that point about being rested this week. I don't think Murphy's going to get rested. I don't think Scotland's going to get rested. Jard, I could see. Cruiser, I could see. But I don't think the midfield's going to get rested beyond maybe Jard.
Didn't they? Was it Carlton who came out and said already
It was actually Sheedy. Kevin Sheedy said, "Oh, you know, I hope Carlton don't treat us too, you know, too badly and rest all their stars," which I presume was pretty much just because, you know, we want a good crowd. Pretty much. I mean, this is Kevin Sheedy. He's a past master at talking up games, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But, I mean, actually, what I was going to refer to is I'm pretty sure I heard that Carlton, or I think it was Carlton, who had Gold Coast playing? It was Carlton, said, "I hope Western Sydney don't get insulted if we rest too many players."
I think that might have been Fremantle, because Freo and the Suns players have been jawing at each other on Twitter all week. Yeah, there's been a bit of aggro between those two this week. But yes, so look, I mean, both of these teams, obviously, from that Friday night game are playing lesser teams this week. But I mean, look, even if Fife hadn't gone down, he probably would have rested this week anyway. That was certainly the talk earlier in the week. But yes. Now, I mean, obviously, we'll have to wait for the team sheets, and no one knows except for the inner hierarchy at Carlton. But I'm assuming that Murphy gets named this week, and if he does, then he seems to me to be the obvious trading target. Now, we shall move on to the Western Derby, or what do they call it? The Prime Minister's Cup, which is pretty much the Prime Minister on one side, represented by the Western Bulldogs, and Western Sydney representing the entirety of the rest of Australia, Molly, which seems to be pretty much the odds that Julia Gillard's been facing for the last three years.
Maybe the Greater Western Sydney are representing Peter Slipper.
Maybe, yes. All right. Now, obviously, the player that people are talking about, people aren't talking about so much, but they probably will be next week when he gets on the bubble, is Taylor Adams. Now, he was a number. Let me see. It was early teens in the draft. He was 14, I believe. It was him and Devin Smith got picked after him, and that was, I think, one of 13 to 14. It might have been. And those were the last picks that GWS had in that big run, obviously, in the first round before, I think, the next pick was like 50 or something or other. So I think the pre-draft hype was around whether, you know, he'd fall to Richmond, because he seemed like an inside midfielder, which was pretty much all the players that Richmond seemed to have. But anyway, he does have a lot of leadership skills, and he does have, most importantly for fantasy purposes, he was top 10 in the beep test at the AFL Combine. So we know he's got endurance. One might ask perhaps why Adams didn't play before now, but I'm not sure exactly whether he's had an injury or not. That's obviously something which would need a bit more information out of GWS, but it's obviously hard to get. But He certainly outscored Adam Treloar on the weekend, and he seems like a an inside and outside midfielder. He's a pure midfielder, even though, of course, in the Dream Team and Supercoach competitions, he is listed as both a midfielder and a forward. So I'm seeing a trade from Smith to Adams on the cards, if you hadn't already gone Smith to Treloar. So especially with Smith getting the green vest this week, now that might not necessarily mean that he's going to get it in future weeks. It might just be his version of a rest, as opposed to, you know, people like Coniglio and Green who actually got a week's rest. That might be his Smith's version of rest. But unfortunately, it does tend to put a cap on his cash generation for a couple of weeks. So I can certainly see a lot of coaches going that Devon Smith to Taylor Adams route. Are you thinking of doing the same, Molly?
I had it been, and as you say, with all the other guys being out, it sort of has put a dampener on those sort of moves, unless you decide, you know, maybe I'll hold off on Ablett for a week to trade out Devon Smith and take some cash there. I mean, he's put on 120 already, so, you know, that's definitely well worth taking the 100 grand for him to go to a guy like Adams who's ready now.
The other thing is, because Adams is a round one draft pick, he's actually priced at about 125 in Dream Team. So yeah, you're not quite getting that extra 20,000. Yeah. I think it's well worth it, because I think his job security. I mean, look, this is the thing that, I mean, I mentioned some of those names going through that plan that I had. You look through the NEAFL, I think they're called the UWS Giants in the NEAFL. You see a bunch of names in their best every week. Anthony Miles, of course, who's only had the one game. You're seeing Sumner is starting to play well, and he's another round one draft pick. And the other one, of course, is Nick Haynes, who I believe is listed as a forward. So those are the three names I'm going to expect to see over the next month or so. So it's a question of whether Adams has job security, whether they're going to, you know, what happens with Green and Scheel and Coniglio, how many of those players can they all play on the one side? Are they all going to rotate? How's that all going to work? So it's going to be an issue about whether, you know, like Scheel, they come in for one, maybe two games and then go out again, or whether they're going to stick in like, you know, like a Treloar looks like he's going to, or maybe even Treloar himself might get rested. So it's going to be a very fraught situation. It is going to be a bit luck-based. It is going to be, you know, possibly also knock-based or, you know, injury-based, but that is what we have coming up with, you know, in our faces in the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, about picking which of these Giants kids we shift our allegiance to from some of these the previous ones who've topped out in price.
Yeah. No, I can't argue with any of that. That sounds all about right with them. It's going to be a shooting, you know, fish in a barrel trying to wear which one's going to play each week.
Now, before we get off the Giants, we should make mention of Sean Edwards, who is on the bubble this week. I can't see any reason to bring him in. I think he plays too high. Are you on board with that sentiment? I think, you know, I think we can wait for those ones I've just mentioned. And Adams being one of those, I think we can certainly wait for Adams over Edwards.
Yeah, I would say without putting a jinx on anyone, I hope that most of the back rookies that most people have are still playing and playing okay. So I guess the only worry is Bug might get a rest in the next few weeks. But apart from that, you know, he's looking at it like a potential keeper, and Alice and Morris, touch wood, have been serviceable, although not fantastic in fantasy terms. They'll be okay for another week or two.
I was reading a paper actually today that Bug was saying he was looking forward to playing on Judd this week. Of course, I don't think he will, because I think they might rest Juddy. But anyway, it's good. Well, I mean, it's good to know that he's still got, you know, challenges in front of him, and obviously his job security is pretty high. That he's starting to call out the best in the competition, which is nice. Talking about the bubble, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, that is, we're referring to players who've played two games, and their prices are about to start changing. Mark Austin for the Bulldogs. Now, we've had Lucas Markovic. He seems to have gone by the wayside just for the moment. They've been playing Mark Austin. Another one I think we can do without in fantasy, Molly.
Yes, unfortunately, this Austin is definitely not the $6 million man, so I think we can avoid him.
So you're saying he doesn't have many powers, is what you're saying?
Well, he's not worth $6 million, and that's what we would want in fantasy terms, so move on.
All right. Okay, we'll move on to the North Melbourne Gold Coast game. Molly, now, for those long-suffering coaches who have either Aaron Sandilands or... who's
Mummy?
The one? Shane Mumford. It was someone in the chat was still got Mumford.
Or those that went from Mummy to Sandilands.
Oh, those poor buggers. Yeah, those poor mongrels. In terms of bang for your buck, if you're looking for a premium, is Hamish McIntosh the biggest bang for your buck premium, assuming that you already have Giles? And given that, I mean, you look at maybe Ryder, he's reasonably priced, but McIntosh is still underpriced given what he's scoring. 123 on the weekend. I mean, it was only against Gold Coast, but, and you know, his score was increased by the fact of Todd Goldstein not being there. After round one, we were sitting here thinking, oh, it's going to be a classic timeshare. Since then, McIntosh has gone bang, and he just continues to go bang. And Goldstein, I'm not sure. I mean, well, then again, Goldstein scored, what was this, some ridiculous amount of hit outs and Supercoach. It was like 198 in Supercoach.
55?
Yeah.
55 hit outs or something?
He scored some ridiculous amount of Dream Team points. It was like 160 or something in the VFL. So I mean, is McIntosh an actual fantasy premium this year? Is the bang about to go pop? What happens there?
It's really one of the hard ones to read. I mean, I've traded out Mummy last week and moved Hale, which I don't really want to talk about, but moved him into the ruck, which, you know, worked to cover a donut, but not by much. But yeah, I mean, I've been thinking, do I trade in a ruckman or not? And a bit like the rookies before the year, I'm just paralyzed with dread it to all the different options that none of them are, solid gold like they have been in the past, and all have their own little issues. And I mean, McIntosh's is what happens with him if Goldstein comes back and starts to fire. You know, will he kill his fantasy relevancy? Our team's going to start to work him out. They've got a great run. They've played some, they've still got a lot of good fantasy scoring point teams ahead of them, but I just don't know. And personally, I don't like that round 11 bye for the ruckman. I like the idea of having that after the bringing them in after the bye.
Look, I mean, you look at all of them. I mean, Ryder himself, his numbers, you can argue, are inflated because who was it? Hill's been injured. Cox obviously has had a few issues with midfield rotations. You know, he's been in and out of games, and obviously didn't do so well in the GWS game. Jacobs hasn't done a lot wrong, but I'm not sure he's absolute top two. Yeah, everyone's got issues. You're right, but I mean, I think McIntosh. I think is probably. I don't think he's going to be scoring 120s every week. Put it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with the other problem with Cox, I mean, I don't know whether it'll happen or not, is a lot of people are putting forward the idea that he might play even more time up forward with Kennedy going down, which, you know, is fantasy, you know, Harry Carey on his scoring.
True, but he does seem to score okay even doing that. But I mean, I'm not worried about him personally. I think he'll continue to score, and put it this way, given the way that West Coast are playing, that might actually be a good thing for his numbers, because he tends to get a lot of plus 12s down there, let's be honest. But anyway, now also at North Melbourne, just wanted to go back to something we talked about last week, Molly, another DT ton by Lindsay Thomas this week, and I was talking with a North fan about this, and I put to him the idea that the reason Lindsay Thomas is scoring so well this year is because he's actually swapped roles with Lee Adams. And I was told, yes, that seems reasonable. And the reason, apparently, is that because of these yips that Lindsay Thomas is having, it's actually better for the side, for North Melbourne as a football club, if they have Lee Adams playing the deep forward role who marks and, you know, takes set shots, and Lindsay Thomas plays up the ground and doesn't have to worry about, you know, kicking the ball through the big sticks. And he actually does, he's actually scoring more goals, you know, from 50 metres than he used to do from 20 metres. And for fantasy, their numbers have actually switched around. It used to be Adams who was the premium, and now it's Lindsay Thomas who's scoring like a premium. So I don't know whether he can keep it up, but I mean that seems like a definite role change to me, and it actually makes Lindsay Thomas I could see many worse decisions than taking a chance on Lindsay Thomas at this stage of the season, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, his scoring has been really good, and I mean, one of the nice things about it is he's done it against good teams and he's done it against bad teams, and he's had bad games. I mean, not that you're wanting to have bad games, but he's had bad games against good teams and he's had bad games against bad teams. So
yeah, just to specify, he did have a bad game in round two, but that was injury related, and of course the round three one he was returning from that injury. So of the three injury unaffected games, all DT tons, which is great for the price he's at.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, he's yeah. I mean, you can't argue with that logic.
All right, we'll move on. Play on, as they say on DT Talk. Play on. Of course, the big news on the Gold Coast side of that game, Molly, Kyle Horsley. Now, of course, with Gary Abbott not there. With Gary Abbott not there, they needed someone, obviously, to play those midfield rotations. And, of course, they didn't have Riscatelli there either. And I think, as I might have said last week, the word out of the local league up there was that Horsley had been playing the Harbrow role, the rebounding halfback. But he pretty much played midfield, pure midfield all day, and certainly his numbers reflected that. A big 101 in Dream Team. Now,
8 tackles.
I am seeing a lot of fantasy coaches, and I am one of them, who actually wants to get Horsley in before the bubble to take maximum advantage of his increased midfield rotations while Ablett and Riscatelli are out of the side. Are we crazy? Do you wait another week on Horsley, or is he too good and you need to get him in right now?
Well, I mean, you're not crazy, but I mean, it's always that risk that, you know, it's a one-off and you get caught out by it, which has happened before. You know, we've had these rock guys come in, get 100, and turn into the punk in the next week. So you do have to watch that, and that could be a problem. But yeah, he's had a great first up game. He's had marks. He's had tackles. He's had one scoring attempt. So, you know, it's not a bad performance to start a career off with.
Like, for instance, there are a lot of centre rookies who are, you know, putting up startable scores. I mean, obviously, we'll go through the GWS numbers this week. You know, 90s from the likes of Green, McDonald, Shield put up a decent number 81. How many of those, I mean, we'll take those three, I suppose, Green, McDonald and Shield. Would you actually be starting Horsley over any of those guys this week?
Well, maybe Green or Shields, but definitely not McDonald. I think McDonald's sort of proven it and is very consistent, so that's why you want to keep him. And, I mean, Shields done very well, and Green, I think Green... And did he have a bad game or did he have a bye? I can't remember.
He had a bad game, then he had a bye. Yeah. So, he's put up hundreds himself for Green, but I mean, certainly Horsley seems like he's going to get more midfield rotations than Green is, and I mean, they haven't really got much else in that midfield, and it seems like, I mean, especially the advent of Carmichael Hunt as the blocker, he's doing really good things for the rest of that midfield. So they're doing really well out of Hunt as, I mean, as the he's pretty much Hunt's pretty much playing the sort of role that Tyson Stengline used to play at the Eagles, for, you know, blocking for Juddy, and it's been really helpful for that midfield. It's been really good.
Yeah.
Now, just to round out the Gold Coast talk, I noticed Brandon Materia was a bit of news about today that he was going to be out for 4 weeks. Although, again, these lying buggers at Gold Coast, I saw another report later on that he might actually play the week after. So, I don't know what's going on down there, Molly. But anyway, the reason I wanted to mention that is because that could mean that Aaron Hall could come back and play that Matera role next week. So That's a bit of a fantasy issue, obviously, because those of us who have him on our forward benches are wondering whether, you know, Hall can be relied upon to be an emergency. You know, those of us who have the likes of Dixon or Couch, maybe as our other forward. Because I certainly ate a donut in Supercoach this week because I didn't have any forward cover for Paul Pleasure, so that's a bit of an issue for those of us who are relying on some of these forwards who are a bit shaky. But I'm hoping just in passing that Hall's going to return to provide us a bit more in the way of cover next week. Now, we shall move on to the Melbourne St Kilda game. And I guess the question here, I think, Molly, is about Jack Grimes. Now, I did not consider him a fantasy premium this year. I thought he was always going to struggle with Melbourne struggling. And obviously coming back from the... he started off with an injury, I believe, didn't he? I'm not sure he played the first... I'll lie. So you look at his numbers, and you see three consecutive mid-60s. And he is now priced at mid-60s in terms of his dream team. Now, so Supercoach is a little bit different, but these comments are probably a little less relevant to Supercoach because his numbers are a little bit better there. But 111 on the weekend, which was his first really decent score for the year. So where do you see his average at? Is it going to be much more like the 65s he produced in the first three rounds, or is it going to be anywhere near that 110 he produced on the weekend? Because I know coaches do have him, but I mean, again, we're talking about these all these trades you have to burn through the buy period. It seems like if you've got him, you just have to eat those 65s, and you have to start him. So I mean, it's going to be painful, but you have to wear it now, don't you?
Yeah, you do, and. Yeah, he's probably a guy who, if you've got him, you'll hold him. His scoring's okay, but it's not great. You hope that there'll be more closer to hundreds than back at that 65. But I don't think he's fantasy relevant as tradable in. He's just, with the injuries he has, you know, even knocking himself out and getting suspended in the same game, he's too risky, I think, these days. And, it's just ride it where you can. I mean... they've got a couple of tough games coming up. In fact, four in a row against the Geelong, Hawthorn, Sydney, Carlton, and even throw in Essendon and Collingwood. You know, I think that's going to be a tough run for them. So his scoring could be badly affected by that.
We'll put it this way. If you were in a position where you had to choose to start one of Jack Grimes and Thomas Bugg, wouldn't you choose Bugg?
Oh, absolutely. I reckon I would be choosing Bug at the moment.
That's the problem. So if your structure is set up that way, that makes Grimes a real fail because he's pretty much going to spend all that time on your bench, basically burning, bleeding money. So it's not very healthy. But you've made your bleed. You have to line it now, unfortunately, for those if you've got him. He could be a perfectly serviceable, B8, as we say, you know, the eighth back, but... You paid a lot of money for him, so it's going to hurt a bit to watch him do that. Now, speaking of hurting a bit, Molly, I know Footy Lover 18 was certainly hurting watching Darren Geary on the weekend. Now, 17. Look, you don't necessarily expect players to score hundreds every week in every position. You might expect the odd 50 now and again, maybe a 40 if they've done particularly well or have got a knock or something. 17. Jaron Geary delivered a 17. It's not as if he got subbed off either. Played the whole game. Played a decent role. You know, he did play a decent role for the side. But 17 in an entire game of football, Molly. It's hard not to get, to actually play the whole game and not get 20 points. So, look, the fantasy analysis of that, obviously definitely getting pumpkinized is... What has changed in that back line? Jason Graham is back in there. So that is an obvious, reason to point and say, well, okay, Geary's numbers have gone down because Graham is there. And I noticed that... who am I thinking of? James Gwilt has just played his second game in the VFL, coming back from long-term injury. And if he comes back into that side, I'm not necessarily sure that would be great for Geary either. I mean, it's not as if he can get much less than 17. So... those again, those who got Geary at the start, or I think actually Footy Lover 18 might have gone sideways to him. So they've enjoyed a decent amount of cash generation from the start of the season, $83,000 in Dream Team and $130,000 in the Supercoach, but that cash generation has stopped dead now with that score against Melbourne. Is it time to sideways trade? Is someone, you know, take that money and run, or what do you do with Geary, assuming that Graham's going to keep on playing there, and you've got Gould coming back? I mean, is he going to be restricted to some of these low scores, or is that just a blip on the radar and you've got to ride that out?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be worried by it, indeed. And I mean, it's a tough decision. I think we've had this decision in years gone by. We've had these mid-price players or, you know, just over rookie price players, and they've had a good start and we've held on to them for too long and lost all their value or had to put up with poor scores. So I think there is some merit in changing tact and using him as an upgrade target, especially if you save from some money on a trade for like Ablett or Fife, maybe you've gone for a riskier player or a player on the rise and taken some cash to do that, then perhaps you've got the money to upgrade a Geary to a better option and take a little bit of profit, or downgrade him to a cheaper option if there's one there. I'm not too sure there's too many good back downgrade options at the moment, but you know, that could be an option as well.
I suppose the thing that I would think here is that given that Geary has got a round 13 bye, and there are a lot of other, you know, premium backs who've got a round 13 bye, he would be the one you'd sideways trade at the bye period.
Yep.
So if you can hold him until round 12, then you can get rid of him and get, you know, obviously. So he, I mean, he's supposed to be a keeper, but you know, he would be the one you'd just sacrifice and say, well, I'm not really making a sideways trade, I'm actually doing an upgrade. So you'd be able to post justify it that way. So. But the question is, I mean, you've got another, you know, what's that, 7 rounds until round 12. What do you think he's going to average in that time? Is he going to lose you so many points that it's going to be like, you know, eating a donut anyway?
Yeah, he's got a big break even this week of 97. So, you know, you're going to have to decide if you're going to hold him long term or get rid of him now in this short term period to make some cash.
Yes, all right. Also on that St Kilda, just wanted to mention a couple of players who are on the roller coaster, Reece Stanley and Terry Malera. I believe Stanley is just about at the top of the roller coaster. When we talk about the roller coaster, that's about the prices going up and then coming down, obviously, with the numbers. Stanley started off at priced at about 40, and he's been averaging 75 now. His break even is 65 in Dream Team with an average of 75, and 70 in Supercoach with an average of 76. So that is where you hit the top of the roller coaster and your price is about to level out. So that means if you're looking to you know, get rid of that player as a cash cow and go down to someone else, that is the perfect time to do that because you're maximising the amount of cash you make out of them. So it looks to me like Stanley is at the top of the roller coaster, whereas Malera, I think, has a fair bit more to go. And apparently the news out of St Kilda is, I mean, you've got to distrust the injury news out of St Kilda at the best of times, but the news is that Adam Schneider is going to be at least another 4 weeks. So it does look like they're going to need Malera to keep on playing that role for the next month or so. So I think if we're looking for advice on those two, I think it's sell Stanley but hold on Malera. So would you agree with that?
Pretty much. The only thing that might make me want to keep Stanley another week is him being a tall forward up against the Hawks back line that, you know, has had its troubles. You might want to take a risk on that, although, you know, whether the Hawks can get their act together this week and you know, come back with a bit of anger for, you know, the talk that's been in the media about their performances. There is an option that maybe Stanley can make that 65, maybe a bit more. But, you know, I think there's definitely an option to trade him out as well and try and use some money up there to upgrade him to some of the guys who are a bit on the lower side.
Yes, we're getting lots of Hawk related trolling in the chat this evening. They're mentioning your boy Schoenmakers. I don't think Schoenmakers is going to play on young Stanley this week. But if he does, I can see some goals in his future. But right now on to the we have finished that game. We'll go on to the Brisbane Geelong game. Another player who was on the bubble this week, Jack Crisp. I think he's another one who we can safely avoid. Now, he does have a fairly handy break-even of minus 60 in Dream Team and minus 49 in Supercoach, with averages in the mid-50s in both competitions. However, I think those numbers are probably inflated by the fact that he played Gold Coast in his first match. His next three... Well, Essendon, Collingwood and the GWS. Not so good. I mean, and then after that, North and Eagles, and then the bye. I don't think his numbers are going to be all that great. But I mean, he might be one that sort of falls through the cracks, because there's not going to be a whole lot of hype around him, because he is a Brisbane player, and there does tend to be a lot less talk about him. But I haven't necessarily seen anything that tells me that he's got much more job security than a Giant, for instance. I would much rather have a Giant than Jack Crisp.
Yeah, and I mean, as you sort of say, he's that round 11 buys, and with all the GWS players that we've had, we're probably trying to get rid of those round 11 buys rather than bring another guy in who has a round 11 buy, I would have thought.
Quite true. On the other side of that game, Molly, now, here's a name which I didn't think we'd be talking a whole lot about this week, but I've heard a couple of fantasy coaches talking about Alan Christensen as an upgrade target. Now, this is a fairly sensitive subject for me, Molly, because I am a former Burns victim of Shannon Burns, and not only Shannon Burns, a Burns victim of Burns, but also of Matthew Stokes. So I have a set against these titchy half-forward flanks from Geelong, and yes, feel free to criticise me for being a bit biased on this one. Not biased against Geelong, but biased against the sort of player that he is. A couple of DT tons in a row, but I look at his numbers last year, and I see four DT tons, three of which came against bottom four sides, and another one came in a 10-goal rout of Adelaide down at the Cattery when I believe Menzel got injured. I don't see his numbers, his role having changed a lot this year. I don't think his mid-rotations have been all that much greater. Kelly wasn't in the side this week. I don't see him averaging anywhere near that. And I have, I mean, you know, listen, learn from my fail, my friends. You do not pick, I don't think you should be picking these titchy half-forward flankers from Geelong, because they will let you down. They will stay high in several games in a row, especially when Steve Johnson moves into the midfield. Christensen is just warming the seat for Steve Johnson to move into the midfield and get his 140s, as he probably will do this week against Melbourne, and someone like Christensen might not score nearly as well. Well, maybe against Melbourne he might, but I mean, I would see playing against a real side, like a competitive side. If Steve Johnson plays in the midfield and Christensen plays deep, I could see him very much doing that, and it's happened before with Stokes and with Burns, and it'll happen with Christensen. I can certainly see this. Now, please, I'm eager to hear your side of this, Molly, because I'm sure you're going to have a different view of this, because you're not me and you're not a Burns victim, but am I on the level here, or am I just too hurt by previous experience?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's looked okay so far, but, I mean, whether he can keep it up, I'm not really sure about that. He's going to have some different roles from time to time, and he has got a nice little run of 5 weeks with only really Collingwood as big opponents before they play Carlton before the bye. So, yeah, I think there's absolutely, you know, some merit in bringing him in. Whether it's a good move, it depends what you're looking at. I would have thought for the extra 40K, I think it is, to get Johnson, it's a much safer pick to get a guy like Stevie J, who's done it before and is just waiting to explode, you would think. Mm. And as we said in other weeks, a lot of these players tend to come back to the back of their footy card, to their averages over time, and so Johnson at the moment is down on that, so you can expect some big weeks to come for him.
Also from that game, another bloke on the bubble, Jesse Stringer. 10 tackles this week. Obviously that was, you know, related to the fact that there was pouring down rain for almost the entire match in that game. I can't see him getting anywhere near that for the remainder of the season. Of course, in his first game, he only got on in the last quarter. He kicked 2 points in that game. Another one who I mean, look, 77 and 87 are decent numbers in that second game, but I think that was rain affected, and I can't see that on a consistent basis. And now, speaking of on the bubble, Molly, owners of Billy Smets must have seen saying, "Billy, please be a hero," but he comes on just before three-quarter time and has, what did he have? Well, 4 points, what does that consist of? Two possessions. I think it might have been two handballs. Maybe a hit out and a or something. I'd need to figure out the exact numbers, but this is the third match. He's on the bubble. This is the most important week of a cash cow's existence, and he pulls out a 4 in DT and a 3 in Supercoach. What do you do? Then we'll talk about Stringer as well. But what do you do if you own Smets? He's just completely destroyed any hope of him earning any cash for the whole of his existence, really.
Well, apart from cry, I think you have to decide if this is a blip on the radar and he'll return to the side, or if he's a goner and it's time to cut your losses and get out of Dodge. I think it's time to get out of Dodge and move on.
Look, I think if you have Smets, and I mean, you know, that is not your fault. That is you can legitimately say, you know, you can tell another fantasy coach, yeah, I had Billy Smets, you know, it wasn't really my fault, you know, it was Brad Scott, really. You look like a good player, but you know, that was really not your fault. But I think if you have Smets, you just leave him, just forget about him, have him as your B9, and just assume that you're just not going to touch him for the rest of the season, and just assume that you've only got 8 backs pretty much for the rest of the season in terms of trading. I mean, obviously you might start him if needs be, especially through the bye periods. But I think I think from a cash generation perspective, you just forget about that. Forget about cash. You're not going to trade him. Anyway, getting back to Stringer, Molly. So, did you agree with my analysis of Stringer?
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that was a good call. And yeah, I mean, he's done okay, but nothing to write home about, and move on.
Yes, Tabs reminds me, it was 2 kicks, 1 tackle, and 2 frees against. Yes, sir, that is right. Yes, indeed. Right, now we're going to talk about the game in Launceston, Molly. Apparently there were 2 games playing, but we're only going to talk about one team. We're going to bypass the nominated home team in that game, because I'm disgusted with the entire team. And I can't see anyone we need to talk about from a fantasy perspective. So we'll just bypass that team, unnamed as it is, for this week. On the Sydney side, Ryan O'Keefe. Now, we've been talking about him for a couple of weeks. Obviously, him and his price and Luke Parker's are now, I think, less than 50,000 near each other. And it certainly does look like, as predicted a couple of weeks ago, Parker has turned back into Parker, and O'Keefe has suddenly become O'Keefe. Parker was O'Keefe there for a couple of weeks, but it does seem like O'Keefe is now back to his old self. Is now the week to get him in, because he's got a break even now of about what you would expect in terms of numbers out of him. Do you have to get him in this week, or can you maybe wait a week? Well, what's the strategy for getting O'Keefe in? I suppose the issue there is, how close do you think he gets to the top 7 backs? I mean, is he only ever going to be an F8, or can you assume that he can actually start for the rest of the season if you bring him in now or next week?
Well, as I keep saying, I mean, looking at him getting in the top 7, you can't look on the pure top 7 when you hit the average. You have to take out the first 3 scores and say, and even the fourth score, if you're picking him up this week, and say, I want him to be top 7, 8, probably top 10 from here to the end of the season. And he's got every chance to do that. They've got a good run into that round 12 bye with only, you know, Essendon and the Crows, and really looking like sides They've got a tough run in the DT finals, which could put you off it with Collingwood and Hawthorn and Geelong in the, you know, that 4 week period with the Bulldogs. So
I think the for the final 6 weeks they're very tough, but up to then it's pretty sweet. Yeah. I think for the
Swans. Yeah, I mean he's still got Gold Coast and GWS again, so you know I think he's looking like a player who, unless he gets rested in one of those weeks, he's getting on you know on the older side of players. So you know he's over 30 now. I think he's still a good pickup this week. He's definitely in the mix of players you would be looking at picking up this week.
Mm. All right. Well, we shall move on from that game. Thankfully, move on to the Richmond West Coast game. Now, Brandon Ellis. This was a very frustrating game to watch, Wally, because we're all sitting there watching the game, as you do on Fan Footy and or wherever else you're watching it, and you're thinking, you're looking at the stats and you're thinking, gee, that Matt D, he's down there with like a donut. He's actually got it's like halfway into the third quarter, and there's actually a zero next to his name. He has by that point, I believe it was a handball, a tackle, and two frees against, which adds up to zero DT points. And you're thinking, surely he's the one who's getting... No. Brandon Ellis is the one who kicks a goal to lift the side, and then he comes off and gets handed the red vest. Now, look, this is just unconscionable. I mean, I don't mean we had the unedifying spectacle of on the previous night of in the St Kilda game. Of course, the same thing happened with Bo Wilkes, and I believe the coach was interviewed after the game and said, "Oh no, he had a knock." You know, he had a knock. And then, of course, in the paper the next day they said, "Oh, actually, we tried to reverse it, but the paperwork had gone through." They lie, these coaches. They just lie. So I don't think I actually heard Hardwick's justification for that, but apparently it was that Matt D was actually playing the third tall back, so he was actually playing a role. And despite the fact that Brandon Ellis was actually, you know, had actually just kicked a team lifting goal and was doing all right, that was the reason he was subbed off, apparently. But so, where does this leave us with Ellis and Morris, Molly? Because if Ellis is going to get subbed out like that, how can we be sure that he's going to be delivering starter-worthy scores? I feel like Morris is the closer one to the cut in terms of trade-out targets, and I feel like I want to keep Ellis all the way through, or at least until the buys when you maybe have to upgrade someone. If you're looking to keep one of those guys through till the buys, I feel like it's Morris, but do you think maybe it might be Ellis?
Look, I think when I was doing my university degree, we learned about information decision-making systems. I think you need to go back to the oldest and the best decision-making system that was ever invented, the coin, and just flip it, because I think these guys are very similar. And to try and pick which one's going to be better, you're going to be pulling your hair out each week. I really thought, when I had to start one of these guys, that I'm going to almost use the same tactic I use with a captain and just pick one that I'm going to play. If I have to play them, I'm going to play that same one each time. And that way, A, I'm not going to be frustrated I didn't pick the other one, because I never had any intention of picking the other one. And you know, hopefully their score will average out over the time. But, yeah, I mean, they both had good performances from different games, and you know, either one of them could end up being, you know, a solid eighth or ninth back, but it's hard to pick which one it'll be. So, you know, maybe it's time to start in that plan that you were talking about earlier in the show, to getting at least one of these guys out and upgrading them to someone a bit better.
Mm. Yes, well, there are many arguments either way. I think Heavy on the chat is saying Morris is older. I mean, but then again, Ellis has got a bit higher ceiling, and yeah, I mean, it may be that Ellis. I think part of the reason that Ellis was subbed out this week, and also you could probably argue a couple other subs, was because of these strength and conditioning coaches. They seem to have a list of minutes, and you can only play a certain amount of minutes, and then you come off. Otherwise, they think that you're going to get injured. So. Maybe, but again, the same thing with Smith, obviously, this week. You know, the spreadsheets might have said, "Oh, yeah, we've got to take him off because he's played too much." But, yes, yeah, so I've been well, I just hope that, that instead of them getting, you know, rested, quote unquote, with the general. Or by the way, we've had a visitation from the general in the,
he was
in the
chat earlier.
Yeah, General Saunders, isn't it? Yeah, hello, General. But
I hope that's not a bad sign for you and me. Us won't be coming down with the general.
Right. All right. We'll move on to the other side of that game, Ollie. West Coast now. If you've got Shannon Hearn, after round three, you're pretty much on top of the world. 79 against the Dogs, which is great. 141 against the Demons. That was pretty good. 84 against the Giants. You'd keep that. All these numbers were above his average from last year, which was just on 70. Now against the Hawks, he got tagged by I believe it was Cameron Bruce. You say it might have been Whitecross. I'm not quite sure about that, but I certainly saw Bruce in his vicinity a lot. 24 in Dream Team for that game, and again was tagged by Daniel Jackson in round five, just gone for a big 39. Now his numbers in Supercoach have still been pretty decent and probably start worthy in that competition, but in both competitions he had. Previously, after the first, obviously with that 141 in his numbers, his price had gone up, but now it's gone down again, and he's got massive break evens of 156 in Dream Team and 138 in Supercoach. Now, obviously with Hearn getting tagged, that hasn't stopped the Eagles winning both of those weeks. But do you see coaches trying something different? Because obviously, you know, getting Hearn tagged out of it has not helped. Actually deliver the win against the Eagles, but do you see, for instance, who would do it at the North? Maybe they might even put Levi Greenwood on him this week, for instance, or maybe a Cunnington who's been playing a bit of a half forward role, and then the week after against Essendon, they might put a not Hocking.
Monfries?
Yeah, no, they do use a half forward. Who did they use last week? There was one they used in the Collingwood game, didn't they? Against Shaw, Lonigan it'd be. Who would they would use in that role? And then the week after against St Kilda, I could certainly see. Who could I see? Maybe not against St Kilda because they pretty much that's a pretty much a whole team tag that one. De Boer against Fremantle, I could see. And with the Lions, maybe I don't know, but I mean, I could certainly see a lot of forward tag roles being used against Hearn, assuming that coaches still think that's actually worthwhile and effective. So, I suppose the question is, I mean, if you've got Hearn, and you think that his numbers are going to drop away to those sort of, you know, 20s and 30s, I'm not sure he's going to keep on averaging that for the whole year, but. There has to be some sort of bounce back, doesn't there? Where do you see his average at for the rest of the season? Is it going to be that mid-60s he's been delivering for so many years? Or can he, you know, is he capable of scoring like he did in the first three rounds again?
Oh, he's going to have up games and down games. So I think it is going to be a matter of which weeks he's tagged and which weeks he isn't. So, you know, I would be a bit iffy on his performances from here on in, but he's probably at the level where you're just going to have to ride it out for a while and maybe try and make the change come the bye weeks. Maybe he'll be that third guy in the backs that you'll trade out come the round 11 bye.
Mm. Yes, it's unfortunate, but I mean, I think now is the time if you're going to make that decision is to make that one. But again, it might be one you just have to live with, like Grimes. But just hope that the pressure comes off. But yeah, we'll just have to see on that one. Right, and finally, to round out the round review, we'll go to the showdown. Patrick Dangerfield, Molly. His owners have been struggling a little bit, but that 140 makes it all worth it, doesn't it? So I guess the question now, I mean, so it's a good news story for all of his owners. The question is, do you plan to? Well, I suppose because he's a round 11 player, round 11 buy forward, and I'm assuming that his owners probably have Paul Pleasure as well, those two would be the ones you would bench for the round 11 buy, which probably means you're going to have to keep him for the rest of the season, Molly. Now, how close do you think he gets to those top seven forwards?
Dangerfield? Well, I mean, I think he has the potential. If this is his breakout game, which it could very well be, of him being, in that top seven forwards. I mean, that's the sort of game that we thought he was capable of, and you know, I think he still is capable of, and you know, he's that sort of a guy. That's the guy we think he is, and he could easily go up to, you know, from here on in, averaging 100 every week. So, you know, I think he's absolutely keeper material, and he's definitely not worrying me at all with his performances.
It is interesting that, I mean, obviously Adelaide's got the best draw of anyone pretty much this year, but it is noticeable that his best numbers have come in the Hawthorn game, obviously, which is against a good team, and obviously in the showdown, which is a big game. I mean, Port not necessarily a great team, but it is a big game. So he's a big game and a big occasion, and a player who does crack in when there's big opponents to play. And I mean, it is going to be interesting to see how he goes against this week against the Swans, who of course do tend to kill opposition scores. His three previous scores against the Swans are 39 in 2009, when he was still not getting a huge amount of time on ground, 94 and 76. So yeah, I can see him probably getting somewhere between 94 and 76 again this week. But if he gets pulls out a big 100, that's going to be a very good sign of him being a keeper for the rest of the year. So I can certainly see a bit like with Giles. I can see a lot of people keeping him because they just want to conserve trades and cut. And you know, he's never going to be the first or second most important thing to worry about.
Yeah, and I mean he's rated as a forward, although he does have centre midfield eligibility as well. So I mean, if he's scoring, you know, 78 to 80 every week, and then having breakout 110s, 120, 130s, that's all you want from a forward. I mean, that's you know, that's about what you could expect even from a guy like Stevie J or Chapman or the other guns. I mean, that's what you're going to get out of them.
Mm. All right. And to round out the show, Darren Pfeiffer of the Crows. I was going to talk about John McCarthy, but that would be a bit self-indulgent because I have him. But anyway, Darren Pfeiffer is on the bubble this week with scores of early 60s, well, average of early 60s. I didn't like either Pfeiffer or McCarthy's game in that showdown, Molly. I thought both of them actually shied away from the contest a bit and didn't crack in for those, you know, contested footy, which is what the showdown's all about. I seem to have started talking about him already, haven't I? Anyway, so with Pfeiffer, I don't see him as having a game which is going to stand up to scrutiny when it comes to a selection table. I don't think his job security is all that great. He's just a player. I don't think he's I don't think he's a best 22 player, put it that way, when they're all up and going. But this is a team, Port, of course, who don't necessarily have all of their players up and going all the time. You know, Roden's in and out of the side, and Hartlett's always injured, and there's always something going on down there. So job security for me is the reason that I'm not going to get Pfeiffer into my side, even though his numbers obviously are not the worst in the world. But are you with me on that one? Are you getting on the Pfeiffer train, or is there something else? I mean, do you want to stick to, you know, putting in Giants or because I mean we do like mature age players, but I think this one we can probably avoid.
Yeah, I mean it's nice that he's at round 13, you know, something different, not a Giant round 11. But yeah, I'm not really looking in that area this week, and I mean a lot of people are going to be covering Pfeiffer and Ablett this week, so he could miss out in that shuffle, and we'll wait for other guys to come along. You know, we're still all hoping for Tom Couch to, you know, go from myth to legend, and there's a few other guys from GWS and around the place that could definitely, you know, get games in the next few weeks who might make us forget about Pfeiffer.
Indeed. So I think the headline here is that people who had him from the start, of which there are still a fair few people, I mean, there's no reason to trade him out. You know, he's on the bubble, and hopefully for you guys, he gets picked this week and plays a few more games. But I think if you don't have him, I don't necessarily see a huge amount of impetus to get him in over some of the other, you know, some of the Giants especially, who are coming on over the horizon. Right, well, that concludes the show for this week, our first ever sponsored show, and as I said, it was brought to you by sportsdeals.com.au. So you go to sportsdeals and you can get special deals. I think it's, as I said, it was they are for sporting goods and paraphernalia, and there's a deal every day, and it changes every day or so, and it's all specifically to your state. And you can earn some referral monies as well for referring your friends through social media. So, right, that is the Coach's Box for this week, Molly, without further ado. So we shall see you guys next week, same time, same channel, 10:30 on a Wednesday, if you're listening live at fanfooty.com.au/video, or obviously on iTunes or through the website coachesbox.com.au. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Okay, thanks, everyone.